Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me as always,
Ben Vanell here. Thanks, Tommy, for welcoming me onto our show. We're ready to close off this special little series of ours and return to the real world. Joining us as always to talk about video games and be friends is Adam Knox.
As always, that's all I ever do. That's all I am to you, is just a friend.
Just a friend.
We've got a bit of a gimmick this episode where this is pretty crazy, but we thought because it's the end of the 2000s, the internet's starting to get really big, people are talking over the internet, we thought we'd do this episode remotely. How funny is that? What a crazy idea we've had. Yeah.
Yeah, bit of a point of difference for this one. Boy, I hope this doesn't sound too crazy to people. I hope they can get their heads around the idea of hearing us talk over this crazy new chat program that's been popping off lately called ICQ.
Yeah.
That all the kids are on. They're having their virtual hangouts on. They're catfishing, pretending to be sexy teenagers
when they're
really just disgusting old men.
I'm meeting people on Habbo Hotel and then taking the chat over to ICQ.
So I guess let's kick off. We start with cybering, right? You guys want to cyber?
Sure. Can I actually? I do have one question before we start, and pretty complicated question. It's a 3-part question. First part of the question is A. Second part, I would like to know S. And third part, if you could tell me L as well. I'll take my answer off.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
All right, that's fair.
Okay, in order. In order of how you asked them. 69.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, please. And up the bum.
Oh, that's so juvenile, but it actually really got me.
the king of the
I think those two might be linked.
King of the game facts off topic forums, the funniest man on there.
We should point out in all seriousness for the listener that this isn't a bit. We are actually doing this over video chat because one of us, not naming names.
Hey, I'm not going to name names either. I'm not going to say any names, but I just want everyone to know that me and Tommy both positioned ourselves in the position where we didn't have to say the name of the person who it is.
Yeah, me too. I'm the same. I'm the same. Exactly the same as you guys. I am glad you pointed out where we are legitimately doing this over video chat because it would be potentially something we would say as a joke. But we're doing it on ICQ, which is apparently the best video chat software that exists currently. It's really good. And I've got a bit of a cough, so we thought it would be safest to go back into the bunkers, Fallout style, and just do this over the internet.
Fallout. Now, there's a game series that I'm assuming is dead. But here comes along the late 2000s, and what do you know? Fallout's back, baby. That transitions us perfectly into the year 2008, where we'll start a retrospective of the second half of...
Well, before that, we should talk about some other stuff. Before we actually finish off this series, Tommy, do you want to take the lead?
Yeah, quick plugs going forward. If you're listening to this hot off the presses, we are going to be doing a live Twitch event to cover the PlayStation 5 reveal event showcase that they're doing. They put it back by a week. So, yeah, you can find on our socials when that's happening. It's happening alongside the video going live at 6 a.m. Melbourne time, and then I don't know what other places. I can't remember what the times are, but
yeah.
For some of you, it's more convenient than for others. It's certainly very inconvenient for us. I'll say that much. So if you're listening and you can tune in, please fucking tune in and make it worth our whiles to be absolutely rooting our entire days by waking up at the crack of dawn to test out Twitch and an ICQ connection and all that kind of stuff. But looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting our first look at the PS5 and chatting about it with you boys and hearing what everyone else thinks. So
twitch.tv/filthycasualspod if you can't be bothered going onto Twitter or Facebook. twitch.tv/filthycasualspod. We've already got like a few hundred people following, so it should be great. It should be a good little audience for something I'm genuinely excited for, especially having just covered the history of video games and getting really excited remembering all these console launches and all the like sick games and the interesting stuff that happens around launch time. I'm pumped. I'm excited.
Yeah, same.
Me too.
I think it's worth kind of mentioning too, like, you know, especially with these episodes, we want them to be non-time-based, so we're not talking too much about the news and shit the last few weeks. But the reason that... Obviously, I think everyone knows that the PlayStation thing got pushed back is because of everything going on in America and around the world now. I feel like I want to say out loud on this that Black Lives Matter and that that's how I feel about it. I know I'm no one, but I just want it to be literally on record. And I would love for that part of this podcast to date poorly because it no longer needs to be said. Wouldn't that be good if this was like a pointless part to listen to in the future?
Yeah.
By the time it's come out, that'd be glorious.
Yeah. I mean, the way that...
Fixed within 24 hours.
The way that the news cycle works with this podcast is like anytime we talk about Nintendo and don't know what they're doing, they announce a direct 40 minutes later. So if by me saying that, the world somehow gets fixed, defund the police. Anyway, whatever. It's not the time or the place, I suppose, but who knows when is and when isn't.
I like how quickly your mood on that changed from feeling like it was an empty gesture to in the space of the same sentence you were convinced that you alone were going to be the reason for a change.
That's narcissistic personality disorder, baby.
But yeah, obviously echoed by me and Ben as well. And yes.
2005 is when...
Hey, just quickly, I'm very distracted. I'm not... like, this is fine to leave in. Hey, Adam, are you... Is Ben's video frozen for you?
Nah. It's moving more smoothly than yours. Okay.
Oh, really? Ben's video has been frozen for me for close to 5 minutes now.
Really?
Or he's just sitting incredibly still.
Yeah, that's why I started to move.
He's wiggling all about the place now.
Yeah.
I've lost faith in the idea that his video is ever going to resume for me. But that, you know what? That's fine. Yeah. As long as I can see that beautiful mug, I'm happy.
This ICQ one, it definitely worked better for us when just me and Ben were doing it over that first Twitch thing we did. But who knows?
Well, you're welcome.
let's
it prioritizes audio, though, because it does sound like we're just on a phone call together.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, the latter half of the 2000s is how old were we all in 2005? I think I turned 16.
I was 18.
I turned 19.
Mm. Nice. Well, couple of
fresh out of high school,
full blown men over here, and then old me sitting there, little jailbait Knox over in the corner, still
sucking on a lollipop with your little denim cutoffs.
Little sailor's
I think
hat.
I know it all. But it was definitely So I think we were all coming into the point where when you're like that sort of age, I know for a while during this period, I sort of disconnected-ish from video games like a little bit, or like more in the early 2010s maybe, or maybe never, but like it went from, you know, like 100% of my free time to maybe 40.
Yeah, I couldn't afford that second generation of consoles that we talked about last week. So I had a PlayStation 1 all the way up until the latter part of this period that we're talking about today. And yeah, I don't know. I had high school shit going on. I was a little disconnected from it. Still playing PC games. And probably the ones that we talked about last week are the ones that I was still playing now, because again, I didn't have heaps of, you know, disposable income. But I become, yeah, a little bit more connected with this third generation of consoles that we talk about today. I have a lot more memories of this generation than last week's one.
Mm. Everything kicked off in November of 2005 in the US when the Xbox 360 launched, which was then March 2006 for us in Australia. It was definitely like, I remember at the time it being way ahead of all the other consoles in terms of when it was launching and how powerful it was. Because I used to read the Xbox magazines because I had an Xbox and, you know, them and this and stuff. And it did that thing where at some point they...
Thanks for the explanation.
I used to read the Xbox magazines because the content inside them was content that I wanted to consume. If you were,
it was relevant to you in your life. Yeah, yeah, as a gamer. Yeah, yeah.
If you're a little
confused, read it for the articles. Just reading it for the articles.
Everything I'm saying on this podcast, I want it to be a clear statement on where I stand in history. And that is the reason. But they did that thing where the magazine slowly transitioned in like the sort of latter half of 2004 through to the early half of basically from when Halo 2 came out, it started being like, I guess this is like kind of an Xbox 360 magazine now as well. Mm-hmm. And it was all previews of like Gears of War and the Rare games that would come out at launch, that sort of stuff. So I was pretty across that the Xbox 360 was this big jump. It was the first like HD console. That was its big point of difference. It was saying, get a load of me, I'm HD, 1080p. Can't you see? The Xbox 360 wrapped poorly. I don't know if you remember that about it.
Blu-ray player?
It's so funny that like only their second console, and even at the time I remember thinking already they've fucked up the naming of this. Like even at the time going, where are you going to go from here with the next one? Like what are you going to call that? The 720, the Xbox 720.
That was the like the presumptive name for a little while that people would talk about before it was. Then they were like, no, minus 359 from it. It's the Xbox One.
Yeah.
Which still makes it weird now because you say original Xbox and then the original revision of the Xbox One comes up rather than the Xbox One X because it was so. Yeah, they completely fucked it. But now they fixed it with Series X. But yeah, it was very powerful for the time, and the whole, because everything in like home media setups was changing to be like the HD TVs, the widescreen flat panel LCD plasma bullshit. That from memory wasn't like a great technology at the time. I remember lots of talk about like, If you play a game on this, it will burn into the screen.
A lot of people like going to the home screen and then the home screen permanently being emblazoned into their... I think plasmas were worse for it, but yeah, definitely. I remember this happening.
Very expensive as well.
I still have a lot of hangover for that, even though it doesn't really happen on modern TVs as far as I'm aware. Like if I pause the TV to take a, if I pause something on the TV to take a phone call and I'm on the phone for too long,
take
I start
a phone
to get
call?
That lingering fear of like,
what are you?
Someone calls me, I'm, what?
You're a drug dealer? Who uses a phone anymore?
But just anything like getting distracted, and then it's like I still have that panic in the back of my mind, like, oh no, I'm permanently damaging the TV because I've had Netflix paused for 8 minutes.
Yeah, I definitely have that too.
Did it ever happen for you guys? I don't think it ever actually happened. There was never like a PlayStation Home button on my screen permanently or anything.
No.
Or like, you know, the shadow of it.
I don't think it happened, yeah.
I think it was more that, well, A, I don't think we ever had a TV that was from that early generation when it was a real issue.
Right.
And I think you also just kind of had to have, like, if you always only had the footy on, then like the score boxes would stay on there because there was never any variation on what was in the corner.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But so
I think you had to have it on for an incredibly long amount of time.
Right.
Like an actual like obscene amount of time.
And then not watch anything else in between. It had
always
only be that.
Yeah.
So when the 360 launched, big deal. And what were some of the games that came out? Because I remember a lot of those Rareware games that we...
Did you get one at launch, Knox?
Nah, fuck no.
Did you get one early?
No. Didn't get one until... In fact, I didn't get one for years and years because my brother got one when a game called Dead Rising came out and I played a few things on his one.
Right.
So... And that wasn't at launch. That was like a year later or something maybe. At launch, they had, those Rareware games that we kind of talked about a little bit last week that were like in production for, like Cameo Elements of Power was in production for the GameCube originally.
Right.
You had Perfect Dark Zero as well. I think both coming out at launch. So two Rare games after only Grabbed by the Ghoulies on the original Xbox. You had two Rare games coming out at once. Both of them with middling receptions.
I remember that.
And this would be a trend that would continue for the entirety of this generation. A bunch of the other games were kind of games that would have been PC games first, like back in the day, but during this generation they got refocused so that generally the Xbox 360 was like the lead platform for them. So that was like Call of Duty 2 and Quake 4.
Mm-hmm.
So PC games, I don't think we'll even really talk about much for this late half of the 2000s because they really faded in importance and how many games were being made like with the PC as the focus versus these consoles.
Right.
Because like a game like The Elder Scrolls Oblivion is a PC game, a notable PC game from this era, but it is also an Xbox 360 game.
And that was definitely the sort of primary place where I think at the time most people would have played it. And it was built around the idea that, well, a lot of people are going to have a controller. So this menu is really big and weird and feels shit to use with a mouse. People got mad about that at the time, but... As someone who definitely drifted away from PC stuff during this time especially and would dip into the odd console game, it worked for me.
Yeah, I was fine with it. I think I kept like a laptop throughout this period and I would play Civilization on that. And that's kind of the only game that I really needed a PC for in terms of my taste because, this whole generation really changed things for me and the kind of games I played. We're sort of talking before the show about... a few games that came out at the end of this generation we're about to talk about. And they're all the same kind of game and they're all the kind of game that I play the most of. It's those third-person action games.
Yeah. A couple of pieces.
I'm still fully out at the point that the Xbox 360 launches. Like, I'm not back in on games even in a passing way until kind of midway through this generation. So
right.
I kind of don't even really have much memory of the Xbox 360 launching. Like, I again with the original Xbox, I didn't really know anyone who had one. Like, it certainly didn't feel like it had gotten the grip on people that I knew in my sphere of influence in the way that Nintendo or PlayStation had. So I think I was still kind of like a bit skeptical about Microsoft and this console. So just there being a new one, I think I still in my head felt like them dipping their toe in this is still like potentially a flash in the pan. Like, I think I was still like pretty skeptical on top of being just kind of like a bit checked out on gaming for this point in my life. So I don't remember it launching at all, really.
I think the success of the X... Oh, sorry, you go ahead, Ben. Oh, this is so crazy doing this over the phone. You don't know when to talk. Oh, it's so weird. Okay.
I am in the same boat, really. Like, as much as I do have heaps to say about the Wii and the PS3, in terms of the chronologically, I'm completely out on games still in 2005. I'm focusing on high school. I don't have any extra cash. And I have literally no memory of the Xbox 360 launching or existing or any friends having it. My only touching point for the Xbox 360 is the computer, like the PC games that released on it, that I did play. But yeah, I have nothing for the Xbox 360.
Well, I was going to say that, like, the success of the Xbox in general, but particularly the 360, is primarily a US phenomenon. And we in Australia definitely follow after Europe with our habits with this sort of stuff. And in Europe and in Japan, the PS3 did at least become the most successful of these consoles. Other than the Wii. But the Wii is so separate and weird in this generation. Like, Nintendo sits in such a strange time during this period, and we'll talk about that. But yeah, in terms of Microsoft and the 360, like, some of the it was a lot of the sort of PC games that were most accessible for cheapest on a 360, basically. Right. In terms of, like, exclusives, there was Dead or Alive 4 I liked. Dead Rising is really weird and cool, and is now on everything. That's the other thing, that is that over time, most of these games are now playable somewhere else, including even Halo 3 soon, which was the next sort of massive, massive game for the 360. And I fucking loved Halo 3 at the time. That came in 2007. And Halo Reach as well in 2010, which I guess we're kind of not covering. But outside of those, off the top of my head, yeah, there aren't that many huge 360 exclusive games. Crackdown?
Yes. Was the first really one was... good? And the second one? Were they actually good?
Nah. No, not really. The first one came with a demo for Halo 3. So it was it was big largely because of that. And then, yeah, the Gears of War series was massive during this period of time as well. Those were 360 games for that stretch. I think Gears of War 2 and 3 even are still only 360, so maybe they're the biggest. But it was just this kind of...
Right.
This, like, default easy platform for people who just wanted to play a variety of games, the way that the PS4 has been for this last generation.
Right.
Fable 2 and 3, but no one really liked those as much as the first one, is my recollection of it.
Yeah, I think I've played the first one, and the third one I played on PC, though, so...
Right.
Yeah.
And then, like, the Forza series, particularly Forza Horizon, which wasn't until 2012, but that's a fucking awesome game, and that's only on there. But yeah, in terms of exclusives, the 360 is not that significant, you know, historically now. There's not much of a reason to try and dig one out for anything in particular.
I guess.
Well, they learned their lesson and they turned that around in the next generation, at least.
The reason
the king
to have
of
a,
sarcasm.
An Xbox 360. The reason to have one was Xbox Live. Like, that stuff was way better than the Sony alternative. It was set up much earlier. They'd had years to perfect it. It cost money, but it was worth it. And online gaming, if you weren't a PC gamer, was pretty much on the Xbox and the 360.
Totally. And that's the biggest thing that they did right during this generation, is embraced that new wave very effectively. And then games like Call of Duty 4 were huge, and the 360 was definitely the primary place where people would play them. And then they had Xbox Live Arcade as well, which was the first sort of console digital marketplace thing. Initially, the games were, like, limited to, you could only make a 50 megabyte game or something like that. And then at some point they upped it to 200 maybe, and then pushed it to, like, okay, whatever. But yeah, so the first Live Arcade games were very small. They were very focused and kind of different. And now there's no distinction between a, in quotes, digital game and a physical release game, because it doesn't mean anything anymore. But at the time there was a pretty big difference, and that was a cool thing about the 360 that then the PS3 and the Wii both did also immediately. But
were those initial like Xbox Live Arcade games indie games? Because they were so small, were they largely like indie games, or were they like big developers making small games?
A little bit of both. There was Microsoft did like an indie game push during this, where they started putting out a few more. But a lot of these early ones, indie games is what we think of them now, didn't really exist. And that did start that the idea of what you think of as an indie game now did start happening on the 360 first, kind of, where like Braid was an early one. Mm-hmm. Things like Fez and those sorts of smaller, generally 2D, small team or one person games. Yeah, the 360 was a big part of getting them in front of people. And at the same time, you had Steam and stuff like that on the PC, which was doing very similar things.
Yeah, yeah. But I do remember specifically, like, or having heard, you know, podcasts with developers on them, indie games used to be really siloed off in terms of, like, this is where you can get them. And it's sort of not like music where it's like, well, you go down to the pub and see a new band and then you start following. Like, indie games can't just exist like that. So, you had to have a shopfront for them, and it had to be curated, and it had to be quality controlled, and actually promotion and stuff. There was all this sort of stuff that we almost take for granted in gaming now that was sort of being invented around this era.
Totally. Xbox Live Arcade was the thing that did the biggest, clearest example of what it was, and it was understood by people that, like, oh, okay, I get what these things are.
Mm.
It's interesting to think about them back then kind of looking to the future and having a bit of an eye on, like, if we can make a shop front where people can, like, get these smaller products out to people en masse easily, then that could be great for the industry as a whole to tide people over in between big releases. And it's interesting to see them now sort of, you know, in the last couple of years, dipping their toe in what could potentially, and what we'd spend a lot of time talking on the show, could be the next big kind of revolution in the industry, being like the kind of, you know, paying for essentially a streaming service of games. So it'll be interesting to see whether their forward thinking with Game Pass turns into the same kind of forward thinking with the Xbox Live Arcade.
Right. And well, it's a benefit of Microsoft being what Microsoft is, right? That they can come at a new thing like a console and say, well, we understand how shops work on PCs, even though every Windows Store thing that ever exists has been pure dog shit.
Really,
for whatever
bad
reason, our experience with that has added up to, Microsoft definitely being ahead of the curve in terms of content delivery.
They do nail this for Xbox 360, but Sony follows up with the PlayStation Network and their own version of it, and the PS3 launches a year later, right?
Something like that. Yeah, just about exactly a year. I'm just quickly checking if I think the Wii came out like the week before the PS3.
I think so.
They were definitely like kind of neck and neck there.
Let's see.
Here we go. November 19th in the US for the Wii, and the PS3 was November 11th in Japan and 17th in North America. So in North America, it was a two-day difference between the PS3
Fuck.
And the
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. And so another big change that like the 360 kind of pioneered, the GameCube had that WaveBird controller, the wireless GameCube controller.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this was the generation where everything transitioned into wireless controllers being the, you know, the main thing.
The norm, yeah.
All of them had good ones. The 360 controller was very comfortable and good at the time. The PS3 controller, do you remember it initially didn't have vibration in it because of like a weird Sony, there was some lawsuit with somebody. So the original PS3 controller didn't have rumble, but it did have the six axis tilt control shit.
Yes. Yes. I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause this is also, speaking of the PS3 and the Wii, especially when motion controls fucking blow up for a hot second there.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Should we maybe save the Wii for last because it's so there's so much to say about it?
Sure.
And do the PS3 now because, Yeah, I didn't get it anywhere close to launch, but I did own a PS3 and I ended up loving it. I had so many, like I had dozens of games for it. It's one of my favorite consoles that I've ever had. I have, yeah, a lot of great memories and a lot of love for the PS3. Did you guys also?
Yes, very much so. The PS3 was the first one that I bought out of this generation because Metal Gear Solid 4 came out on it.
Mm.
And I bought a day and date with that game and played that game for 11 hours and finished it. That was like, that was $850.
And has established a habit that I will continue to have with my gaming for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Playing games all the way through.
Yeah, I got a PS3. I'm trying to think what year it would have been. Maybe 2014, I think, maybe. I can't quite remember.
So
but
after,
like,
that
yeah,
would have been after
it
the
still had a cup.
After the PS4 came out, would have been 2014.
Oh, really? Okay, then I'm wrong.
I knew
guess it. Yeah, I can't. It was maybe halfway through its life. I think Uncharted 2 was out. I don't think 3 was out yet.
2010, that would have been.
Yeah, probably around about then, yeah. So I come to it with a bit of a library. And it's my first console that I owned that wasn't a Nintendo console. I'd had a Wii for maybe like a year at that point. So it's like a big thing of me. Like, I'm back in on games. Mm. I've got like multiple, you know, I've got like two of the consoles that are out at the one time, which feels like just such a big dick move, like a real living out childhood fantasy of like, imagine being able to, because it was like the super rich kids at school would have like both the consoles, like feeling like a real man if 12-year-old me could see this move. And yeah, loved it, like going in on, so I bought it with Uncharted 2. And so that was kind of my first, my first experience on a Sony console, and just a obviously completely different type of experience. Very immersive, very cinematic. I think I'd also bought a new TV at the time, so yeah, I'm just loving it. Like, and I felt like I really got in at just the right time. Like, played Uncharted 2, really loved that, and then it wasn't too much longer until 3 came out. So I was like, you know, had enough like already good feelings about the franchise to be excited about this new one coming out. And then, you know, GTA 5 comes out a couple of years after that, and, you know, finally getting to play a Grand Theft Auto game after hearing friends talk about them for so long. Yeah, a really great console. That first one of it before they slimmed it down looks like shit. It's such a shitty looking design.
Couldn't disagree more. Like,
really?
I think objectively, yes, but I think it looks fucking dope. Just because,
oh,
like...
Oh, the curvy one, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that I...
Shiny.
I don't think I owned an original curvy one. I think I owned that... I think I owned a slim where it was that matte painting on it. It wasn't the shiny, big, huge boy.
That's the one I got. Whoa! I'm just looking at a picture of all of them now.
There's one right there in front of the camera for you.
Whoa!
I had it to hand. fuck, it's heavy. Yeah, these big ass early PS3s. So like the original ones that came out initially, I still remember this, had a 20 gigabyte and a 60 gigabyte version. And I believe the difference was if you got the 60 gigabyte hard drive one, it also was backwards compatible with hardware for the PS1 and the PS2.
Yes, because I missed out on that and I was really, really annoyed. And they never did backwards compatibility after that, right? Like, that was it. That was the end of it for Sony.
I think the only real reason they did it in those ones is because they still, similar to how Nintendo put out all those like NES minis and whatever, they just had the hardware for a bunch of PS2s they hadn't built sitting there. So they're like, well, jam it in this thing and, you know, it ups the value of it. But like at the time, what a fucking value proposition to have a Blu-ray player, which...
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
big deal at the time. And then a PS2, a PS1, and a PS3 all in the same big, beautiful box that when you turn it on makes a beeping sound like a dishwasher.
Yeah. Fuck, that's right. So in terms of exclusives...
So that was a big part of the appeal to me, the Blu-ray player. Like that, like, and I think for a lot of people too, the value package, because buying it a few years after it had come out too, where the price has dropped a little bit. I think I must have gotten it a year or so after the Slim model has come out, and then JB does a sale where it was like a bundle with that and a couple of games. And yeah, I bought a new TV. Now I've got a Blu-ray player for it as well. Like, yeah, they've just always been so smart about the way that they package that stuff in and get in consumers that are maybe a slightly on the fence. Like,
yeah, I think I'd had a Wii for about a year or so, and I basically felt like I was upgrading when I got a PS3. I was like, oh yes, finally I can afford like the legit console. And yeah, I was about to say before, in terms of exclusive, the Uncharted franchise is the big one, and it is one that I love. Towards the end of the life cycle of the console, The Last of Us comes out, which is another Naughty Dog game. Are there any other huge PlayStation 3 exclusives that I'm forgetting about?
Yeah, Metal Gear was a big deal at the time. Metal Gear Solid 4 was huge. That was like at the time, and he said this, Kojima, about every one of them, but he's like, this is actually the last one. And Metal Gear Solid 4 looked fucking incredible at the time. That was the best looking game I'd ever seen when it came out. I just remembered that the PS3, they fucking dogged you over by not putting in an HDMI cord. It was just like the composite video that they gave you. So I had to like go back to the shops and get an HDMI cord. God of War 3 was a big one on the PS3 at the time.
Right. Yes,
Gran Turismo,
I played that.
Games. Less yes, so than yes, in the yes, past. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those David Cage
little
ones.
Little Big Planet.
Yeah, Little Big Planet. Demon's Souls. There's a fair few games, weirdly, that are still kind of stuck on the PS3. Pretty much all the ones that I've just mentioned, other than the Uncharted games, are on the PS4 now as well.
Yes, but there's no Metal Gear Solid 4, like HD remaster re-release. It's 2 and 3. 1, 2, and 3 that were released as a package?
Yeah, I think 1 maybe not on this generation stuff. But yeah, you can get all of those relatively easily, I think. But
Yeah, I played Metal Gear Solid 4. I played 1 and then I played 4 and I had no idea what the fuck was going on.
No.
But you're right, it looked amazing. It probably for when I was playing it, I was like, how did that is real. That's a real texture. That's a photorealistic thing. Like it was amazing, and then it was an incomprehensible mess story-wise.
But that's what I loved about it, is that it was such a fucking wank. The Metal Gear Solid 4 was like the fucking JOI video of video games, where it was Kojima just going back over all of his stuff that he'd done with the first three and being like, remember this character? Yeah, they're here again for some fucking reason. It doesn't make sense, but whatever, dude. Who cares? We're finishing up here. Here's fucking Mount Rushmore, but with Solid Snake on it, on a boat. But exclusives, weirdly, even less so if you discount the Wii, were less to me, to my mind, to my twisted, warped mind, were...
In your twisted opinion.
They were significant still, but the cross-platform game became a lot more common during this generation.
Mm.
Right, yep.
And a lot of the big hitters were that. Because the joke about the PS3 early on when it released was that it had no games. I guess Killzone was another, you know, relatively big one in the Resistance games. Infamous.
Yeah.
There were a bunch of... Yeah, well, no, PS4.
All right.
There were a bunch of PS3 games, but you just weren't thinking of it. Ratchet and Clank kept going, stuff like that. So people are probably like yelling at their podcast device that we're forgetting them. But... the joke about the PS3 at the time was that, like, you know, the big game for it was Talladega Nights.
Yes,
because it
that's
came
right.
with like a packaged Blu-ray of that when it launched or something.
Yep.
But then jokes were shit around this time. The joke about the 360 is that when you see one, you turn 360 degrees and walk away. And then people, when they got questioned on that, were like, no, no, no. And they put like a picture of Michael Jackson moonwalking off and shit. The birth of memes.
And the death of humor. But yeah, like Tommy and I said, I got in at the end of this, or at least in the like final third maybe of the life of the PS3. So I had fuck tons of games. I had all of the ones that were multi-platform. I had them for the PS3. I had all the exclusives, and I loved it. I still, yeah, I hold it up as maybe my favorite console. And yeah, a great Blu-ray player for someone who definitely could not afford to also buy a Blu-ray player.
Yeah. I also at the time too, like, this is a point in my life where my disposable income is pretty limited because I buy the PlayStation and a TV with a salary from a television show I was working on at the time. The show then gets unceremoniously axed and then I'm out of work for an extremely long time.
Fuck.
So it is that classic thing where I only really had the means to get a new game once every like 6 months maybe. So it's funny how when you look back on it as an entire generation and go, what exclusives were there? Well, really not many. But when you're in the midst of it and you're a bit younger and you can't afford to play everything, it sort of really doesn't matter. Mm. Like, you only need one big, great one every few months anyway, because that's all you have the time and the money to devote to. Well, certainly that's how I felt about it at the time. Like, I didn't really look at it as like, oh boy, not a lot's coming out on this. I was like, oh cool, there's a sequel to that Uncharted game. Fuck yeah. Great. Mm. That's the last thing I played and I loved it. I'll get that.
When you look back at stuff in the manner that we are as well, inevitably things slip out of your head and your blinkers go on and you can't remember everything that was a big deal at the time. Mm. But a million fucking games came out and heaps of them were big. We'll miss some for sure. We won't talk about every game of this generation, but like the ones that still, to my mind, have a bit of cultural relevance, I guess, is the ones we're talking about. And in terms of those cross-platform ones that were a lot more common during this, GTA 4, Skyrim, Red Dead, some huge big fucking hitters. A lot of the time as well, their best version was on the 360, weirdly. Even though the PS3 was more powerful than it,
yes,
it was like more difficult to develop for. So things, especially those Bethesda games, Fallout 3 and those ones, would have a lot more bugs on the PS3 version, weirdly, than on the 360 version.
Yeah, right. I do remember that being the case. That, like, obviously, when I was going to buy a console in sort of maybe 2009, 2010, maybe even 2011, it was pretty late on that I was getting, you know, this console. All of the research was like, well, the Xbox 360 is technically a better console. There was just something about it culturally that kept me away from it. It wasn't the cool one. It wasn't the interesting one. It wasn't maybe the one that all of my friends had. There was something about the PlayStation 3 that just appealed. Maybe it's how it looked. Maybe it was the exclusives, but there was something about the Xbox 360 that just, there was nothing going on that
I'll tell you what it is.
To have it. Yeah.
360's a jock, PS3's a nerd. That's the difference. The 360 was always the like fucking testosterone, play Gears of War online, chainsaw, Halo 3, I'll slaughter you, Call of Duty, bang, bang, bang. Maybe some FIFA. Like,
yeah.
And then the PS3 had like, this is Metal Gear Solid 4. If you shake the controller, her boobs will move. Like, not necessarily a good division, but there was a difference, you're right, kind of culturally there.
I just do feel like Sony have just always managed to maintain that kind of cultural clout and that coolness. It goes all the way back to like the Walkman in the early, and we talked about how them with the branding of the first PlayStation, they really went into like, this is like games are for adults now. Like they just, even now to this day, I still think there's that distinction between Xbox and what Sony do.
Mm. Well, definitely this generation, like it's hard to kind of explain what an Xbox is for, or it was until Game Pass came around, especially.
Yeah.
Versus like, if you were going to recommend only one to someone, it'd be the PS4 every time for this generation. But yeah.
But you're right. I mean, back in the day too, I mean, Nintendo have always been held up as like the doing a lot of stuff for casual gamers. But there's almost an argument to be made that the Xbox is like kind of the true casual machine.
Mm.
I think like it was always the one that people who weren't like heavily invested just drawn to the brand for whatever reason. Whereas the Nintendo or the Wii was almost like, even though it was so big, it was almost like the more kind of like niche focused thing, that whereas if you were just like abroad, you wanted like a dumb shooting game and a driving game and FIFA, you just get Xbox. Like it just had that powerful kind of brand pull to people.
Definitely. And I think you kind of mentioned it, Ben, that whichever one your friends had, because so much stuff was online or transitioning to that, was the one that the other friends would get. So I guess the 360 just was that in certain circles. 360 degrees in a circle, I think you'll find. So yeah, but yeah, the cross platform games were the biggest games of this generation, and a lot of new and interesting and exciting franchises kicked off during the PS3 360 era. Games such as BioShock and Assassin's Creed.
Yes.
Mass Effect.
Batman Arkham franchise.
Batman Arkham. Mass Effect was a 360 game originally, but then later on, Mass Effect 2 came out on the PS3. Some of the Valve games, like the Orange Box.
Oh, yes.
That was a big deal for me. I fucking loved playing Portal and Half-Life 2 and Team Fortress 2. What a good package to chuck it all in there in the one game like they did.
Oh, yeah. Dragon Age Origins, the Dragon Age franchise starts in this generation. I loved Origins. It was. It's weird that I have become so disenfranchised with that series now, because Origins is one of my favorite games of all time, and I never think about it because the rest of them really are bad, in my opinion.
One of the presumptive announcements for the PS4, the PS5 thing, apparently, there's a new Dragon Age.
Is Dragon Age 4? Yeah. It was a BioWare game. Those earlier BioWare games were really good, and yeah, it just dropped off. I would love if the new one is a return to form.
Fallout 3, Call of Duty game every year. Dead Space was a good series of games. Mm-hmm. Your Far Cry's started getting good around now. Like Far Cry 3 came out in 2011, I reckon, 2012.
Rock Band? Does Rock Band start during this period?
So Guitar Hero came out on the PS2. Yeah. And then Guitar Hero 2 would have been kicking off on both that and the 360. And then, all these band games blew the fuck up.
Yes.
Got enormous.
Yeah, I had Guitar Hero 3 on the Wii.
Right.
Which feels like it was the real apex of the popularity of the instrument genre.
Yeah. Man, they were fucking fun. I loved all of those games.
Yeah. So, Rock Band launches in 2007. Bang in the middle of this generation. Guitar Hero still, I think, is the big one. It's the cultural. I mean, it was the first one. It's the one people associate this genre with, almost like Kleenex for tissues. A Guitar Hero is the instrument game.
Definitely, Rock Band. I think had better music at the time because it was the first one to open it up to being a band. It wasn't such guitar focused tracks, obviously, and a lot of the Guitar Hero tracks that were just like those kind of 80s like light metal. Diddly 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 diddly, like, I guess that is quite hard to do on a plastic guitar, but it's not a good song, so I'm not having
a lot of Van Halen and like bad Aerosmith and stuff.
Right, just stuff that didn't line up with my tastes, I guess. But what else did you have around this?
These kind of games kind of get into like early DLC where they start having the like downloadable songs and upgrades to like expand the lifespan of this game that you've clocked every. I remember that being one of the first examples of like, oh, that's cool. You can own the game and then more stuff keeps coming out for it after you finished it. That's pretty cool.
Definitely. This is the DLC sort of generation. There were bits and pieces that came out on like the original Xbox, but Horse Armor for Oblivion was like the big first initial kind of dip your toe in the waters of microtransactions, where it was like $3 bucks or something and you just got this dumb armor for your horse, obviously. And boy, did they learn a lot from that experiment, huh? But yeah, DLC became like the common expected thing for virtually every big game. Is like the game would come out and then later on you would get your DLC for it.
Yes, if you've been listening to this series not realizing that, go back and re-listen to every episode with the thought there's no DLC for any of these games at the forefront of your mind.
Yeah, pretty much, other than like Splinter Cell, like a bit, but it was all free as well, paid DLC. This is when that started happening. And like the concept of the yearly season pass, pay full game price again to get 4 more map packs or whatever. Do you remember this is more like 2011, so not really the late 2000s, but they started bringing in the online pass for games. So like,
oh yeah, yeah,
like around Uncharted 3 sort of time. I remember that having it where if you bought the game new, you would get a little code where it's like, okay, you can play online. You pay full price. We love you. But if you bought the game secondhand, you wouldn't. That code would no longer work. So it was their way of trying to control that market.
Yep.
Yeah, the Assassin's Creed games got huge during this period of time. I think it's worth mentioning those again.
Yeah.
I was never super into them, but they really kicked off in a very pop culture, like, hugely popular. Fucking hell.
I remember the first one coming out and not being able to play it. Like, watching trailers, being like, oh my God. This was revolutionary at the time. Like, that scale of city, that kind of vertical, traversal, platforming combat just didn't exist. And
yeah.
I really, really was jealous of anyone who got to play that first one. And then the second one comes out. I'm playing it on, I guess, the PS3, and I still hold it up as one of my favorite games. It was incredible for the time.
Yeah. It's weird how this generation definitely had whatever level of technology we reached, it did feel like it was enough to shift games into like a new type of thing. They were just a little more competent, and the scale was different, and there was something about this generation in particular that pushed games into being very, very similar to what they remain now. Like, if you go back and directly compare the two, obviously games have improved over the last, you know, 10, 15 years. But something like a Borderlands or whatever that came out more than 10 years ago still looks a lot like a game that might come out tomorrow. And literally is on the fucking Switch, now that I mention it. But, like, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Totally. Well, we talked about, and as have many people, the fact that the Assassin's Creed franchise gets tired because it is doing the same thing for about 10 or 15 years. And it starts with Assassin's Creed 2. It's the giant open world third-person action game collectathon. It's a map with 200 little symbols on it, and you got to go collect them all. And that starts in 2006 or 7 with Assassin's Creed 2.
Yeah. Yeah, because Assassin's Creed 1 kind of didn't have as much of that side stuff, did it? You were just pretty directly going through the story, but in a large environment.
Yeah, and it was more focused on the assassination side of things, which it really Assassin's Creed stops being from about 2 onwards. It's more about exploration and platforming, and then that weird side story.
Finding Creed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the Uncharted franchise is the other one, the other hugely influential one that, yeah, again, like you said, Nox, has dictated what games are like to this day.
Well, and Call of Duty, I would put in that as well, where, like, with Call of Duty 4 in particular, that campaign and that multiplayer is what shooters were since then, pretty much. Like, they, even to this day, until maybe, like, the 2016 Doom, I guess, was a little bit of fresh air, or, like, the odd
PUBG and Fortnite.
It wasn't until
the Battle Royale game, which has only introduced an extra thing. It hasn't actually fully, comprehensively changed first-person shooters. It's just added a new thing to that single-player campaign, multiplayer online.
So, definitely, like, everything that you see kind of starting here, and that is this new innovative thing, like Gears of War as well, where it's like, it's taken like that kind of Resident Evil shooting, but it's this cover-based thing. Cover-based shooters like Uncharted did that as well. It took it from there.
Yep.
What games are today is very much formed during this generation in an interesting way, that I think is worth taking a look back at in this a retrospective of the late 2000s podcast. If you're just joining us fucking somehow, we're up to talking about the black sheep of the crew.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. The games on 360 and PS3, they're very much similar to what's happening now. And not overly dissimilar from what was beforehand. It was more like an iteration, whereas the difference between that a revolution.
The difference between like the PS3 and the 360 is like Coke and Pepsi, right? But then here comes Wii, and it's a fucking like boot. It's
L-A-I-S.
Just something completely different. It's a trolley.
It's a computer games console.
It was so weird and different and to me disappointing during this period of time. Like, I don't know if you remember this kind of feeling, but I remember back in the late 2000s feeling like, oh shit, Nintendo's dead. Nintendo changed from what I liked about it for all those years and is now this dumb weird thing that always has these annoying motion controls, puts out these kind of shit, broad kind of games that are focused to get your grandma to wiggle the fucking controller. I was very much in the anti-Wii camp.
I bought one just after, I got given one as a gift. A bunch of my friends went in as a joint, I guess, 21st gift and got me one with Mario Galaxy. So given that I didn't get one at launch and just have Wii Sports on it for a while. Like I guess the first thing I went on it was Mario Galaxy, which is just such a great game. So my initial attachment to it was that, and then a new Mario Kart came out eventually. I know what you mean though, like the Mario Kart coming with the wheel, which fine, but didn't feel all that great.
That was the problem. The motion controls is like, you know, fun as they were for a gimmick, they really were to the detriment of the majority of games that I wanted to play on the Wii, which there were good ones. Like the Mario Galaxy games are fucking awesome. Twilight Princess was like a launch game for the Wii and that was good. But like the fucking wiggling your sword sucked. And it was so much less fun than pushing a button in some crazy way. Skyward Sword was fucking dog shit. And outside of those, they're like, I can't remember that many Wii games that I really gave a shit about, to be honest. Metroid Prime 3. But then again, you got the aiming with the thing, which just felt worse and
wasn't quite there. I mean, funnily enough, like, I can't really remember any experiences with the Wii Remote that seemed to fully justify it to me, other than Wii Sports, which was the great, like, the great play of having that as a pack-in and did exactly what they wanted, like got people up in front of the TV that wouldn't have ever been playing a game before. It worked fine for tennis and it worked fine for bowling, but then having it implemented across all these other games, like it just never... I don't remember seeing too many other things where it was like, oh, this is really cool, other than being able to like have the Wii Remote on its side and use it as a little kind of almost like NES controller, like... Yeah. Having the virtual console on there, it was really cool. And the first time they'd really started like looking back into their catalog and making these games available again.
Well,
but even then, it was still better to have the classic controller kind of like attached and plugged into the remote.
It was the first time they kind of looked back at their catalog in a price-appropriate way, I would say, where like, they made like Game Boy Advance fucking copies of the original Super Mario Brothers. Like, well, fuck you. No way.
Right.
But, yeah, the virtual console was pretty cool. But, yeah, I think that Wii Sports is really the only time out of the entirety of the Wii that I remember that controller making sense to me. Or being...
It felt like it made the controller make sense, and it also felt like it sold the consoles, which is bizarre. And that then everything else kind of had to use... It was bad enough when Nintendo did it, and then the third, like... Even them trying to implement their own controller into their games, even that was dodgy enough.
Yep.
Let alone the third party games that tried to do it were just even more disastrous.
Because the actual motion of it was rarely used. You were generally using that controller as either a pointer, so like just a mouse cursor, or as shaking it. It has the same effect as pushing a button.
Yeah, 100%. What did I play on it? I got a Wii pretty soon after it launched. It was like, oh, I can afford this. That was a huge thing about it for me. It was like not a crazy price point. It was like within reach for like a few months of like proper saving. But like, I mean, I loved Wii Sports. Like I played it with my family and my partner at the time. Like it was genuinely entertaining and fun and simple. I played the Mario Tennis game on it, which was, I think, actually a GameCube game. There was like an HD remaster and port with motion controls.
That was pretty common. They did that with Pikmin too.
Right.
Like, there were a few GameCube holdovers that they chucked motion onto.
Resident Evil 4. Yeah,
Yes, yeah, which I did actually play. I remembered, the only time I've ever played it was like a bit on the Wii, and I was like, this doesn't feel right, and so I stopped playing it.
Right.
But, yeah, like I loved Mario Kart on the Wii. I thought it was fantastic. I like played it online so much, really got into it. Super Smash Bros. Brawl was fantastic. It had that story mode.
Yeah.
There are some really good games for the Wii, but yeah, it's mostly first party ones. It's mostly Nintendo games. It's not a lot of third party ones.
Outside of the Mario Galaxy games, for me personally, there weren't any of the big hits like there had been during every other Nintendo generation. There weren't any of the, not hits in terms of sales, but like things that hit with me. It all felt a little it all felt just a little bit weak. You fucking assholes.
I liked it.
It really was, in terms of like how the motion control actually worked, it did really feel like a thing that was pretty common in that time. And I think we've talked about this in previous episodes of this series, yeah, where you saw this video of them announcing the Wii and how the motion control and everything was going to work. And you thought, oh, cool, well, the possibilities are sort of limitless here. And then actually seeing it in practice, it's like, it doesn't really quite work in the way that they've made it look in the video. The good example is it Miyamoto up there at, is it an E3 event with Wii Music where he's like playing the drums and it's just
yes, that's right.
It's just, there's just no way that it's going to measure like one for one movement of like a stick hitting a cymbal. Like it just was never going to work in that way.
Yeah. The other thing with the Wii as well is that you didn't get most of those cross-platform games because it was really, really underpowered compared to the 360 and the PS3, yes, where like the phrase "it looks good for a Wii game" became the, you know, universal compliment for good-looking Wii games. Where it was just like it was a GameCube and a half or something. I don't remember quite how sort of powerful it was.
Yeah.
It was shit. It was very underpowered. Yeah. That was huge.
Yeah.
And they didn't do 1080. What didn't it do in terms of like the input that you could put into the TV?
720, I think.
It was like really behind the curve with Sony and Microsoft in terms of that.
It's like 480p or something, right?
Maybe it was
720p.
Yeah, it
didn't have HDMI and the others did.
It definitely didn't have HDMI. You could have component output, which I think can technically put out 1080p, but the Wii couldn't do that. Yeah. And it wasn't like a DVD player. It wasn't in anything. It was just like a separate little box that was just a Wii.
Yeah. You're right. It was 480p. That's so shit. What you could do, though, because it had a disc drive, it technically had a DVD drive, I believe, not a Blu-ray drive, maybe.
But you couldn't play DVDs for sure.
Well, you could if you jailbreaked it, which is what was very easy to do.
Do I look like I'm AC/DC? I have since modded a Wii so that it can play any game. It was also a GameCube, like in there physically, and it could play every GameCube game.
Because that's why you could use GameCube controllers with it.
Yeah. And why they still produce them for Smash Brothers today.
I jailbroke my Wii and I loaded a bunch of old games on it. Like you could just basically fill the virtual console with ROMs that you downloaded. And because I hadn't had a Nintendo console since the NES, that was cool. Like that was fun. I got to play a bunch of games I never had before, Donkey Kong Country and stuff like that. But as soon as I got a PS3, as this was said by many people, the Wii started gathering dust.
For sure. Mm. And then, you know, this isn't in the purview of what this episode's about, but the Wii U was a terrible follow-up to it.
Yeah. I guess that's something to mention is that the Wii was incredibly successful. Like, as much as there aren't that many great exclusives for it, is it still the most successful console of all time? Like, it sold millions and millions and millions of units. It was hugely popular.
Exactly, because of the choices they made that we are saying didn't appeal necessarily that hard to us, they quite rightly recognized that it would make it more appealing in a broad sense. And, you know, they were buying fucking Wiis to chuck in retirement homes and whatever. Like, it became like an exercise console with Wii Fit when that came out as well.
Yep.
So it was definitely a mainstream success. But in terms of games I would ever want to go back to, the There's not a lot on there.
Yeah.
And then the other things that were out during the late 2000s was the Nintendo DS and the PSP.
Mm.
Yep.
Did either of you have either of these?
Much like the Xbox 360 and the PS3, that was a closely run race. Really hard to split those two in terms of... I had a 3DS, I never had a DS, and I never had a PSP. What about you guys?
Right.
I had a DS Lite. I think I got one when they... Because again, that very first iteration of it was just fucked. Was it not backlit, or it just was the clamshelling of it was just very bulky and...
It was backlit, and it looked like... It looked like a kid in 1977 who'd just seen Star Wars trying to draw his own spaceship.
Right, yeah.
Big, thick fucker. Yeah. I really liked the DS. I had one of those, and there were a bunch of great games for that. And there was Nintendo doing its weird thing of like, okay, it's got two screens, and the bottom one is a touch screen, and there's a microphone on here. You've got to blow into it sometimes. Fuck off. Like, it could go online somehow. That seems crazy. It was really, really cool. And it had a huge library of very good games for it. The Ace Attorney games I really liked. Fucking the Mario Kart DS game that they put out was very good. I can't remember it anymore off the top of my head, but trust me, it's amazing.
When the first one came out, the new Super Mario Brothers, I thought was really cool that they were going back to a 2D Mario, even though we've talked a lot about how it's been very diminishing returns over the years with that particular series and the art style is less appealing than the classic Mario games. But seeing that come on the shelves, I was like, oh yeah, this is cool. Like they've been, because I guess it's roughly around this time that we talked about when the 3D platformer came in, the 2D platformer became a bit of a dirty word almost. Everyone kind of felt like en masse, like, no, we're done with this as a genre.
Yeah.
But I guess it's sort of around this time that and probably alongside the indie stuff kind of finding a bit of a voice that the people start to get back into the idea of like, oh no, a 2D, yeah, okay, cool. Now this is kind of like a throwback to playing stuff in the 90s.
And like kind 100%. Of the GBA as well. But then something with the DS. Right.
Yeah.
The DS and the Wii both had this very much in common, that they had a fuckload of terrible games just shoved on there by who knows what kind of company. Like there was like 80 different like Bratz doll games and stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just typed in DS games to Google there, and one of the first ones that comes up is a game called Style Savvy, and it's got 10,000 clothes. And you just have a look at clothes. That doesn't sound
the DS. The DS and the Wii are both... The Wii is, like, as we said, the fitness games, but a lot of casual games. The DS is a lot of brain training, right? Cooking Mama. Does all of that kick off on the DS?
Nintendogs.
Right. Yeah, that stuff definitely kicked off on there and was popular. But there were a bunch of other very good games that, you know, what I would consider to be proper games. As an elitist fucking dickhead nerd.
Yes.
The re-release of Chrono Trigger is a real game.
The World Ends With You is a DS game that I'm seeing here on this list as one that got re-released recently.
I played a lot of Animal Crossing Wild World on the DS.
Oh, yeah.
The Zelda games they put out on there weren't bad. You had to use the fucking touchpad with the stylus as like to make Link walk around. He would follow where you were touching, which was kind of annoying.
Right.
But, the DS was very cool and had a GBA slot in there too, which was nice at the time. But then the PSP...
It was a little clunky to play, but I remember getting the Super Mario 64 remake was a launch game on it. And it didn't have a thumbstick. It was just a D-pad, so it was a little... Or you could use the touch screen as like a de facto...
Yeah, which sucked.
It was a little clunky joystick to play, but just having a 3D handheld and being able to run essentially Super Mario 64 on a pocket sized machine was like, this is fucking cool.
Yeah, the DS could like just do 3D. It just was capable of it, and then the PSP
was
pretty fucking powerful at the time. the PSP kind of sat in between a PS1 and a PS2 somewhere, but came out in like 2004. Right. So it was really impressive visually at the time. It just, I don't think it really hit because it was the same thing that Sony ended up doing with the PS3, where I think people were just a bit put off by like, oh, what's really on here? What's this new technology they're kind of pushing with those UMD things?
Yes.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
They look like mini discs and they put out like Hitch and movies like that. And they were like, you can watch movies on this fucking
thing. That's right.
Thing.
You can watch movies on it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Want to watch Wedding Crashers? Yeah, yeah, no. Yeah. Well, here's a fucking expensive one that you can only watch on this dumb handheld. it didn't really work. And I think pricing wise, same as a PS3, it was a little bit out there.
It apparently was extremely successful, though. It sold 80 million units over its entire lifetime. I assume largely in Japan, because I don't know successful it was here.
I definitely would have been heavily in Japan. And also, like, same as the PS3, towards the tail end of its life, it became a lot easier to see what it was for. And the price went down and there were more games on there. I ended up, getting a PSP way after the fact.
Oh, and, really? I didn't know you had a PSP.
Dude, I'm a fucking nerd. Shut the fuck up.
After the fact, do you mean you got it recently for your Infinity Games machine or?
No. Like maybe fucking 5 years ago or something. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
Because with the PSP as well, I've heard tell that it's pretty easy to mod those things so you can play any PSP game on them. Now, I wouldn't know a thing about that. However... Here's a weirdly extensive list of PSP games that I think are good. They put out a couple of God of War games on there, which were cool. You could play a whole bunch of PS1 games on it too, which was very cool. Like just flat out, really well emulated PS1 games that you could buy, you know, digitally, which was crazy to, you know, not that long after the fact of the PS1 be able to play them handheld. It really did feel futuristic. There are a lot of kind of dodgy, like push down version ports of like big console games at the time, like Assassin's Creed and stuff that weren't very good. The Monster Hunter games on them were big.
Oh,
you had your fucking couple of Metal Gears on there, a couple of Final Fantasies if you want. Yeah, there are a bunch of the PSP.
There's an Uncharted game on there. Is that the Vita?
That's the Vita, Golden Abyss.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right. Right. Right.
Golden.
It says
Abyss.
You could like connect
Sorry,
it.
Daddy.
Golden Asham.
Connect it to like a PS2 or a PS3 or like computers. Like it was pretty good as like a peripheral device. It sounds like.
So you could buy digital games on the PS3 for it, and then transfer them. That was the word they always used. Not transfer. You were transferring it. I remember I transferred. They put the Metal Gear Solid like HD collection for free on PS Plus at some point, and I had a save of Peace Walker, the one that originally was like for the PSP, had a save of that I transferred over to the HD PS3 version. It only had one little analog stick, which kind of sucked because they were kind of, you know, trying to make console equivalent games like the GTA, like Tales from Liberty City and Vice City.
And Chinatown Wars.
They suffered for not having that second stick there to use.
Yeah,
but, Yeah, the PSP was kind of cool. The Vita then flopped, so Sony's out of the handheld market for now. But it wasn't
there
terrible.
Was always that talk, like, remember the talk of, like, the GameCube having the little link for the GBA and being able to have like a second screen for that. I remember that being a thing for like maybe 5 years there where every new iteration it was like, maybe this is the one where they'll finally get it right, which I guess they then end up really attempting to do with the Wii U. Just that idea, it always seemed like there was a lot of potential there, but it just never, it just could never catch on.
Well, because the Vita, you could stream your PS4 to and play PS4 games on the Vita, same as like the Wii U, basically. People just never used it. I remember there was talk, I don't know if they ever did this, but there was talk of like, when you play Gran Turismo, you can turn on your PSP and like somehow suspend it in front of your face, and that's your rear view mirror. Your PSP is going to be your rear view mirror. It's like, well.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't live in a fucking, like, you know, Lego set. I can't just set up this weird thing to suspend in front of me. I don't have the means to do that. It never really worked until the Switch, right? That two screen or like mobile go between console and handheld thing. And the way to do it was to not just make it a handheld.
Yeah, yeah, it was to not do it. Like the Wii U, it might have had some good functions, right? Like occasionally it was like you'd have your mini map on your game pad, but
it never felt good, it never helped.
And it was never accepted, but generally, just, like that's why the console flopped.
Yeah.
But I just remember reading about it in magazines back in the day, like I think the Game Boy Advance was the first time they'd really toyed with it, and reading articles where they're like, you know, imagine it. Say something like, for example, you're playing like a football game and you can plan out your strategy on your own screen that your people that you're playing in the same room as can't see you doing. It was always like all these examples of these cool things that you could do that then were never once implemented when it actually came down to it.
No,
it's just like the hypotheticals were, it's always sounded great. It's like, cool, someone make that game then. Yeah. Just do that. That sounds cool.
It ended up being the equivalent of like a kid going, what if there was a game where you could do anything? What if that was a game?
I mean, and that happened with the Wii. Like that was, it didn't matter because the Wii was so popular, but that is exactly what happened with motion control. Like, and there was sort of like scuttlebutt that Nintendo was like really leaning on developers to be like, you have to have some form of motion control to release this game on our platform.
Yeah.
And then like Microsoft and Sony both tried to recreate that by having their like the Kinect and the PlayStation camera thing, which I guess they had a PS2 that like PlayStation Eye. So, but they did the Move controller. Remember the fucking Move controller?
Yeah.
Which you still use for VR. So everyone kind of tried to catch up to what Nintendo were doing, but same as Nintendo, they couldn't make it work. Nintendo just got lightning in a bottle with a couple of games and wisely moved further and further away from that as a primary function of their machines. Because you forget, those fucking Switch controllers can still do all of that stuff. They just, nobody ever fucking uses it. Because why would you?
And it's fine when it's there, just like I think we all differ on this, but I'm a fan of, in a shooting game, being able to just like move the controller a little bit for a slight bit of extra edge in aiming.
Gyro controls.
I like that kind of stuff being in there. Yeah, but it's like that's all that really needs to be. You know, it's like from this big, big idea of like the whole controller is a remote that moves to just like scaled back like, just have a little bit of it. Just be able to move the controller around a little bit in the game if you want or if you need that little extra bit of precision. It's just there if people want it. To not like leaning on it so heavily. And the same with like the motion control. You know, the heavy rumor that Mario Galaxy is going to end up on the Switch. Like, I'd love to see it without all that motion stuff in it. And same with like, you know, we've seen so many Wii U ports come over that were designed on the Wii U with the screen in mind and the screen controller in mind that then they've just had to get rid of when they put it onto the Switch. And it works. It works fine. It works better. Like all these like gimmicky ideas. Like once you play it without it and they patch them out, it's like you realize like it really doesn't matter if the game's good. It you know that experience doesn't really matter too much.
Yeah. I think for me, the Wii was an incredibly successful toy because Wii Sports was like my favorite toy that I played with. You know, for those years.
Yeah,
it was a perfect.
Mine was my penis.
Oh yeah, how's the motion control on that? Is that one-to-one or is it a little...
It is finicky.
But yeah, I loved Wii Sports and it's like, well, great. I'm glad you made this console because this works perfectly. And I played Star Wars The Force Unleashed on it and that was like, okay, I can essentially move my lightsaber left and right and up and down and that's about as good as you can get with the motion control. But it sort of feels like it worked for that game. So it's like, cool, you got it right for two games. I guess that's something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of those podcasts. Bye forever.
I wanted to just quickly...
Yeah, that brings us to the end of...
I wanted to run through the top 10 most critically successful games of 2009 just to sort of end off that decade. Oh, yeah. Just to let people know, like... These are the latest games that existed at this point. This is the best of the best.
This is the peak of the art form. But by the time, the culmination of the last, nearly 30 years that we've been talking about on these podcasts,
Exactly.
This is where it led to. Number one.
So.
I guess start with number 10.
Yeah, I think this is number 10. There's a couple of... There's one double up because it was so successful on two platforms.
Oh, right.
Metroid Prime Trilogy on the Nintendo Wii.
Sure. So that I did enjoy that. That had... It was the first two from the GameCube and then the third, which was made for the Wii, but it gave them all the motion shooting, which worked fine in those games, but I did prefer the controller GoldenEye style movement of the original two, personally. And apparently they might come back out on Switch, in which case they all three will have that implemented, which would be great.
Right, right. I never played it because I'd never heard of Metroid at that point in my life.
Sure. They're good games. That is a good pack of games.
Yeah, I if they do re-release them, or I mean, obviously I want to play the new Metroid whenever it comes out, but Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars on the Nintendo DS is next
that's
up. And it is also the last time
crazy.
We hear from
wow.
Nintendo.
That's bizarre to me that game has made it up there. Is this like Metacritic or something? How are these being?
It is. It's Metacritic and I think Game Rank maybe is the other one.
Right.
But yeah, it's ranked by score. Chinatown Wars got 93 out of 100 on Metacritic.
Weird. I could never get into that game. And you said it's the last time we hear from Nintendo.
Yes, it is.
Fuck off. Yeah. Mario Galaxy is better than Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars. Delete
no,
this
isn't
list.
Isn't this of games that came out in 2009?
Yeah, this is 2009.
Is that what you
said? Oh, I'm a dumbass.
This is just games that were released in 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I give myself a rating of 1 out of 10 then. For...
we must have touched on this game at some point. We must not have. Minecraft comes in next.
What the
it
fuck?
It was released in May of 2009. For the PC, Minecraft.
Weird. That's so long ago.
Isn't it? Yeah, yeah. But it just scrapes into this series. And we've talked about it before in context of sort of broader discussions about gaming. But yeah, Minecraft. Bang.
Sure. Wow. That really does tie everything into the modern era. And like that is such an example of, hey, indie games are super popular now and very accessible.
Hey, speaking of indie games being popular and accessible, the game you mentioned earlier, Nox, Braid, comes out in late 2009. It's listed as the PlayStation 3 version here.
I think that the 360 one came out in 2008.
Right. Let's.
I kind of
see.
Remember that. It was good. Braid
yeah,
was
right.
fun. It's
you're right. Yeah.
Same dude who made The Witness, whatever his name was, it escapes me. But yeah, like sort of time travel puzzle platformer thing. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember that being a real, like, a landmark in the game in general. It's like, oh, that's right. We can go back to things being 2D and interesting, and there are ways to innovate within that style or, like, presentation of games.
For sure.
Street Fighter 4?
Oh, hell yeah. I forgot about Street Fighter 4 coming out.
Yeah.
And then Street Fighter 4 marks, like, the return of the fighting game as a genre. It had kind of died off during the 2000s and Street Fighter 4 brought it back and now they're all over the place. I got to play that Mortal Kombat 11 DLC for the next episode.
Oh, yeah, nice. I just lent Mortal Kombat 11 to my dad, so I will not be. But
you fucking idiot.
Street Fighter 4. Oh, actually, Street Fighter 4 is one of two games that appear twice in this list just because of the two platforms it was really successful on. But that appears again. The next game in the list is the other one that is a double up. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
Yep.
That takes up the next two spots on the list.
Stay Frosty.
It's rated the same. Street Fighter 4 is rated 1 point better on PS3. That's why it's split up.
The controller was more suited to fighting games with the split-up D-pad rather than the weird 360 one that wasn't very good.
But yeah, Modern Warfare 2 continues the dominance of Call of Duty in video games.
That one was huge.
I suspect it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth down on the list for rating. It probably was much closer to the top for sales. They were just massive at this point.
Yeah.
Street Fighter 4 again. Little Big Planet is the third highest ranked in terms of reviews.
Again, I mean, a marker a marker of things to come, right? Where it's like it's all community based, it's all online, like player generated content, a very modern game.
Yeah, and I guess like a good example of Sony, well, maybe it's an example of Sony tapping into online services and multiplayer and that sort of aspect of their interfacing, trying to catch up to Xbox with like, hey, yeah, you can like talk to each other and collaborate and do stuff like that and play other people's levels. I remember playing it at the time and it being like a fun novelty, but never being a good platformer.
No, that was the problem, is that the platforming felt shit. The controls felt bad. So I never wanted to play more levels of it.
Yep.
I was kind of the same.
But yeah, I do remember being like, well, this is cool and new. Fallout 3 is number two.
That was a 2008 game for sure. But
right.
Whatever. It can be on this list. Yeah.
Well, it is.
It was Oblivion with guns at the time. People were dubious about it. But this is also Bethesda at their fucking height during this generation. They put out Oblivion, Fallout 3, and Skyrim.
Yeah.
And then for the next generation, they continue to do the same thing, pretty much.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they don't make New Vegas. New Vegas must be a little later on, and it's made by Obsidian.
Yeah.
But I love Fallout 3. I definitely played it at the time. I played it on PS3 and fucking, yeah, loved it. Thought it was fantastic. Like that Morrowind feeling that we talked about last week. For a shooter and like a sci-fi post-apocalyptic game to have that scope for the time was awesome. I still, replay 3 sometimes. I think it's very a great game. And then Uncharted 2 is number one. 96 out of 100.
Yep.
Almost a perfect game. I fucking love it. It changes storytelling in games to something way more exciting, if not, you know, 100% deep. It is a landmark game.
Definitely. If you're going to chart like the... if you're going to chart the progression of like cinematic games, Uncharted 2 is like the next one to talk about after like the original Metal Gear Solid in terms of driving that forward, probably, for me.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah.
Damn.
So that's where we're at.
Yeah.
What a set of decades, huh? 30 years.
Yeah.
Came and went. That's how old I am.
I know. That's it's been good.
Well, yeah, that brings us to the end of this series, The History of Video Games. Thank you for coming on this journey with us. And hey, if you enjoyed this little wrap up, maybe recommend these last six episodes to someone you know who doesn't, you know as much about games. Maybe they'll, you know, maybe it's a good jumping off point. Maybe there's six good ones to listen to if you're outside of gaming. We will be back next week to regularly scheduled programming. We'll be wrapping up the PS5 reveal event. We're watching it live on Twitch, so join us for that. And yeah, bunch of things coming out in the next little bit that I'm excited about.
Yeah, yeah. In 2 weeks, we'll all have reviews of Last of Us 2. Then Ghost of Tsushima is not that long after that.
Yeah.
And then I guess we fucking spin the wheels again until Cyberpunk. But we'll have some stuff.
There's stuff here and there that's been slowly trickling out in the last few weeks.
There's a lot of games that I've been getting to recently that I have not had time to. So like I think next week I want to talk about Death Stranding a little bit because I finished it, and it's wild that no one else is talking about it, only like 6 months after it came out. But I think there's a bunch. Oh, The Elder Scrolls Online. So I'm getting into some different games and looking forward to being allowed to talk about them.
I'll have that Mortal Kombat 11 DLC, and for some reason Dark Souls 2 I've been playing a lot of. Yeah, cool. I'm excited to... Right. Yeah, that was very fun doing these special ones the last few weeks.
Unfortunately, we've covered the entire history of video games, so now we have nowhere left to go for a
only the future,
series.
Baby. Only for the future.
Yep.
Always forward.
Yes. Yes. All right.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. Head to filthycasuals.com.au. Links to the socials and the premium Bandcamp episodes we have. Also the Patreon. You can support the show and get a bonus episode every week. We'll see you next time. Thanks very much for listening. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
30 more years! 30 more years! Actually, I shouldn't chant that at the moment. There's probably people who want that. Anyway, whatever. 30 more years of video games specifically.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.